Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Bethann.
Good morning.
As folks who get up at well before the crack of dawn, we know from not getting enough sleep, don't we?
Yeah, I would say for a lot of journalists, that's exactly the case. I mean, we've heard what time the folks from Morning Edition have to be arriving to be able to record pieces in the morning before they hit air at 5 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not necessarily a good thing for our health, as we've also heard. Now, but even if you count your blessings instead of sheep, there's a good chance that even after you've exhausted your list, you might still be awake. Although insomnia is just one form of sleep disruption, the Centers for Disease Control says that between 50 and 70 million Americans try to cope with lack of normal sleep. Breathing, sleep-wake, or movement disorders are some of the other reasons. Neurologist Michael Russo is the co-founder of the Hawaii Sleep and Wellness Foundation. It's sponsoring a conference this month to sensitize health providers to some of the latest research on sleep. Dr. Russo, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Bethann.
We have for a long time heard that, well, you know, people need to get a good night's sleep, and if you're not getting 7 or 8 hours, you're not getting a good night's sleep. At the same time, we seem to be in an environment where sleep is not really truly valued, and that you're thought kind of, you know, wussy if you say, I got to get to sleep. When we look at that idea with how many people we think are sleep deprived, how many people are we really talking about? In Hawaii?
There's a great number of people who do not get enough sleep because they're bullied into having to perform more tasks in a given day. Spending 7 to 8 hours in bed is not necessarily equating to spending that kind of time sleeping. You sleep with a greater efficiency if you're sleep deprived, maybe 90%, but the normal person should sleep at a sleep efficiency of about 80%. And if they're getting 8 hours time in bed, they're probably sleeping about 7 hours.
So for the number of people that might have sleep disorders in Hawaii, based on some of the national research that we have, because my understanding is there is no real research that's based in Hawaii, how many people could possibly be having sleep disorders and not really know it and perhaps not even be discussing it with their doctors because they're thinking it's something else?
There could be as many as 400,000 individuals here in Hawaii with sleep disorders. There may be 300,000 or so who have obstructive sleep apnea, about 25% of the population. Difficulty breathing at night that then awakens them, fragments their sleep, and results in poor daytime performance.
That's a lot of people, given our you know, relatively small population of 1.4 million people, and once you discount kind of kids from that. What happens when somebody is having these issues and that person may go to his or her doctor thinking that maybe it's something else? Does a doctor routinely talk about sleep and ask? Is that something that you hear from other docs in Hawaii is really one of the first questions they ask?
Not often enough is it asked about. Usually when a physician asks about something, they're obliged to then diagnose and treat it. And if the physicians don't know enough about the sleep disorders, how to diagnose them, how to treat them, they're less likely to ask about them. Hence our desire to educate the physicians as well as the patients that there are good diagnostic techniques and good treatments for sleep disorders.
And that's more than just here's your prescription for fill in the drug.
Oh, it should not first be give a drug. There's too much prescribing of Ambien or prescribing of sleeping pills without a correct diagnosis of the cause of the sleep problem. Sometimes these sleeping pills could make an individual worse rather than better.
The idea that, you know, first do no harm for a physician seems to be in conflict with what you just said. If it's a matter of trying to really winnow out the sleep issues that could be treated non-pharmaceutically with the knee-jerk reaction of here is something that's going to make you sleep. How do you begin to change that mindset within the Hawaii medical community?
By educating the physicians, the dentists, anyone who has patients who may have sleep disorders, teaching them that there are ways to diagnose the disorder before then treating it, before then giving a medication that may not help them.
What has to happen for a patient to be able to maybe think first that it may be something having to do with sleep?
Often it's the spouse. We'll tell the husband, you have to do something about that snoring. Sometimes it's an automobile accident where the patient has fallen asleep, run off the road, hit another car, and been told, okay, you have a sleep problem. You're too sleepy. Do something about it.
Really, it's that prevalent to where that would be a trigger for someone?
I see patients who have automobile accidents due to falling asleep on the road weekly. And I have to advise them, no driving until they get their sleep disorder diagnosed and treated.
I mean, that's a frightening thought. I mean, you could be out there on the road, and if you're seeing at least, you know, a couple of people weekly who are having that issue, then that puts other people at risk, too. That's far more than just a spouse saying to the other one, hey, you better do something about that snoring. But while we're talking about that, is it usually a woman who says to her husband, I mean, that's a very, you know, maybe typical situation that we see and have seen for a long time on TV or just, you know, talk about as being a cliche. But is that really more prevalent than a female who snores?
Females snore also. It's usually the wife who identifies the husband as having a problem. Then the husband shoots back, well, you snore too. So it's often the wife who wakes up to identify that the husband needs to be rolled over in bed to stop the snoring.
There are over-the-counter aids that are advertised for that. Do they work?
Well, Benadryl, for example, it's an antihistamine. Histamines will keep you awake. Antihistamines will help you to go to sleep. So they do work under some circumstances, but not if you have a drive to awaken. If you have a drive to awaken to breathe, you don't want something that's going to push you into a deeper state of sleep while your body is struggling to awaken to breathe.
But the over-the-counter devices, you know, the breathe rights, those kinds of things that are said to help.
They can help in some circumstances. Say the breathe right attempts to open up the nasal passages. There's something called the nasal trigon, which could collapse when you inhale through your nose. It's an attempt to open that up to allow greater airflow.
And just in general, though, because when people have to get a decent night's sleep, and there may be a lot of people for whatever reason, because they're having breathing problems or because there's, you know, sleep-wake disorders, or they just are the kind of people who have a circadian rhythm that makes them more, say, night owls than morning larks, but they have to be able to get up very early in the morning. How do you advise them to be able to change that rhythm?
Well, they should not awaken early, say 3 days a week, and then try to awaken it other times, say 4 days a week. It should be consistent. 7 days a week, stick with whatever schedule it is you wish to stick with. Avoid light at the end of the day, even if it is daylight, if you wish to wake up at 3 a.m. Give yourself bright light when you wake up at 3 a.m. Try to shift your circadian rhythm to that which you wish to stay at on a day-to-day basis.
But if somebody is waking up at 3 o'clock and, as you've mentioned elsewhere, that the body is moving downward temperature-wise to the low at 4 in the morning and then it starts to increase again, which is moving toward wakefulness, can you really trick your body if your body rhythm is moving at that point, thinking that 4 o'clock is really the low?
It takes a long time to change the body's rhythm. If you were to wake up at 5 in the morning, it would be a lot easier to do so than to wake up at 3 in the morning. But if you're going to wake up at 3 in the morning every day, it should be every day, and you should be consistent about it to sort of trick your body into thinking that 3 in the morning is 5 or 6 or 7 in the morning.
All right. Well, we'll have to check that out with Derek Malama. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with being able to get the word out a little bit more that maybe we should be a little more concerned about sleep and not look at it as the stepchild.
Well, the conference is 10 and 11 February. Please join us at the Hawaiian Hilton.
Thank you. Dr. Michael Russo is a neurologist and vice president of the Hawaii Sleep and Wellness Foundation. The Sleep Disorder Conference will be held on February 9th through 11th at the Hilton Hawaiian Village. We'll have details about it on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.
If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep.